It's been 2 months since my last proper pose for Eidos here. Somehow saying 2 months just makes me want to break into that Smash Mouth song. It's been 1 week since you looked at me. No? How is everyone doing? And then I go into the crowds and slap hands. Woo! No. Like, seriously. How is everyone? I hope you guys are doing well wherever you are listening from. I have missed you guys. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, so forgive me if I sound a little bit nasal, but I'm so excited for this episode! And so should you. Before I get into the good stuff, you know how I was going back and forth about how critical episode 10 is for me and how much I wanted to make it really fruitful and special? Well, I managed to make it come true with the help of an awesome soul. As you know, I've been doing a monologue since I first started this podcast and never had anyone on the show. But today, this will be the very first time that we are having someone on the show. Let me just add a little bit of backstory to this. The reason why I chose this topic today is because I have been suffering from daily migraines. It's not weekly, it's not monthly, it's daily. I have been well so far, partly because I think I took really close care of my diet. I do have migraine-free days now, and I realized the change in my diet drastically changed my condition. I was assuming whatever I had was cluster headache, so of course I went online and searched for a possible diagnosis, and that was when I came across trigeminal neuralgia. Now, in brief, trigeminal neuralgia is a neuropathic pain condition that affects your trigeminal nerve. From my research, there are two types of TN. Number one, the classic, also known as type 1, it causes extreme sporadic sudden burning or shock-like facial pain that lasts anywhere from a few seconds to as long as 2 minutes per episode. And number two, the atypical, also known as type 2, which is characterized by constant aching, burning, stabbing pain of somewhat lower intensity than type 1. Now, if you watch my Instagram post, you'll understand why it is also described as the most excruciating pain known to humanity. It opened up my eyes because when I discovered TN, the boring, pulsating pain in my head meant nothing at all. And then came the question of the possibilities that Singaporeans might be suffering from it as well. There is no found cure for TN yet. Hence, I wanted to create an opening for anyone who might be suffering from this illness. So, in the long-awaited episode 10, medical, what is trigeminal neuralgia and the fight against, we are going to uncover what trigeminal neuralgia is with our amazing guest, Amanda Young. Amanda is the founder of Face the Change, which is a campaign to increase TN awareness in hopes to finding a cure. She was diagnosed with TN in 2008, but her perseverance, determination, and her amazing soul has enabled her to achieve success across many levels with only the sheer intention of spreading awareness about TN and assisting those who might be suffering from TN. Before we move on, you should know that there is 3 parts to this interview, so just bear with me if you want to learn more. Lego!
How are you?
I am fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you so much.
My dog in the background, just so you know, sometimes he gets a little nuts.
No, it's okay. I have a cat as well, so I totally understand. You gotta see, like, you're gonna hear, like, random, like, you know, cat sound at the back. Because So, first of all, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much.
Glad to assist and help anybody that's doing TN stuff.
And so, I just wanted to tell you that your video on MSNBC, that was the first one that I actually watched of you. And I don't know how you do it, Amanda, but you really inspired me. Like, I don't have trigeminal neuralgia, but I don't know if I have it. I haven't got, you know, like a MRI scan, but how do you do it? Is it like still, this is off the record. I'm going to like start recording and ask you the questions later, but is it
like, I didn't even at the questions, really. I like things to be organic.
I totally agree with you, but it's still affecting you, right? Like trigeminal neuralgia, you're still going through day by day.
It's been pretty progressive over the last few years, so since that video it's gotten a lot worse, but I'm still living because there's no other way.
I know, but like, I know it sounds cliche, but your spirit, no, it's true. Because I have migraines and it almost every day, and it
comes to a point where I'm like, oh, you know what? I just can't work. And I still, there are days that I feel like I can't do this. But yeah. I don't know how you do it though.
Well, I think you hold on to the fact that you will have better days, you know, like you just take it as it comes. There's no other way. Yeah. I've done a lot of work, and I've done a lot of coaching with people who are struggling with like a newer diagnosis. And it really is just about taking each moment as it comes, you know, because not to say that I'm used to the pain, because I never get used to it and it's always morphing, but I get used to the idea that nothing stays the same.
It's true.
Like if I can find a way to just accept the fact that like this is just always going to change, then I live it as it comes versus always worrying about what I was like, or, you know. It takes time, though. Don't get me wrong. It's not an easy process. And I hope that you get a diagnosis or at least some level of support so that you know what you have to do, you know, the ways in which you manage and deal.
Yeah, that is true, though. The reason why I actually came to you is because, of course, the video from MSNBC. And the other thing is, I haven't found out like a community or a support system for trigeminal neuralgia itself. I've seen one article on a newspaper and that's it, but I don't think they have any communities for, you know, TN itself. So that's why I reached out to you. And I saw another, I reached out to a BuzzFeed editor as well. But yeah, I think she was a bit smart.
I've seen a lot of her stuff on BuzzFeed. She did that whole training, the whole treatment in, I think it was Florida with Leslie Carman.
Yes, that's the one. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Leslie Carman just kept reaching out to me and kept saying, you have to come do this, you have to come do this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I appreciate your desire and your want to help people. And I love that it comes from a personal story, but this isn't possible for me right now. And she's like, well, your life is more important than your job. And I was like, yes, and medical insurance is also important. So for you to tell me I should just take 3 weeks off and come see you to be changed, I think you need to understand that, like, that's not part of my schema right now. So she was a little too sales pushy for me.
Oh, can't stand them. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm very particular about stuff like that. Like, if you want to help me, then I need to be ready. So for you to like say your help is more important than your job, I'm like, yes, it is. And I'm finding ways to take care of myself. But like you telling me I'm going to take 3 weeks off of my job as a school social worker, that's not a possibility. You know, I was like, summer. And then I, you know, I just gave up on trying to like convince people that people don't do things with your talking into them. They have to do them on their own. They have to be ready, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I agree with you. So 3 weeks off, that's a long time. Even I can't take that time.
Yeah. Like the BuzzFeed girl can, like, she's fine. She can totally do it. You know, because that's job. And I'm curious, because did you see all three episodes?
No, I didn't, unfortunately. Did you?
I did. And I'm not sure that she really had lots of success with it.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to check it out right after this. I'm going to see how it is.
Yeah, I think the other woman had some success. The woman that has, like, I think she had endometriosis or something that went with. And I think she had some success. I think there's always a bit of a placebo effect in every treatment. And then, cause everybody wants to be so hopeful that things are going to be different. And then I think, you know, for some people that work that she does is very, that Leslie Carman does is not just a late treatment, but it's also like a very social work type treatment. So it strikes a little dissonance for me, because I'm a licensed social worker and she really shouldn't be doing that kind of work. As a laser surgery, you know, whatever the title is that she is, I just don't think she should be doing social work. So I have my own feelings about that whole situation. But anyway, that's what I'm talking about.
No, but I kind of agree with you. I mean, for me, from the whole thing that we just talked about, is just I used to work in retail for like 10 years.
Wow.
I can't stand people who do hard selling, you know?
Yeah. Retail is tough, though. That's a stressful job.
Yeah, it is. But it's okay. I got out of it. It's crazy. It's like we're bartenders and we like, you know, we're like a medium for everyone. You know what, today? I know I sound really mean when I say that, but it's true. It's nice to get to know everyone from every walks of life, you know?
Yeah. Where do you live? You're in Singapore, right?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Where do you live in Singapore?
Pardon?
What area of Singapore?
Woodlands. It's actually near the border of Malaysia.
Yeah. Yep. I was in Singapore the year before.
Uh-huh.
How is it? I have a friend who lives on the marina, like literally on it. Yeah. She works for she was the CEO of AIG in Southeast Asia. She was based out of Singapore, but she had offices in like KL and she's all over the place. So yeah. So I went to visit her last year while I was in Indonesia, and my goal was to get to Malaysia and like just cross over, but I never got to because I ran out of time.
No, I know. I totally understand. But that was for Phase the Change, or was it for?
No, I was in Indonesia for work for not the change, but actually for one of my other jobs. I hold several jobs. So it was a fitness consulting job in Jakarta. So I was in Jakarta, and then I met up with my friend in Bali, and then we went back to her place in Singapore. I stayed there about a week, and then I had another week to play with, and I was going to go to KL, but there were other things in Indonesia that I really wanted to see, like a couple of like volcanoes I really wanted to climb and stuff like that. So I went back to Indonesia instead.
Yeah, that's good.
Singapore is beautiful and clean and organized.
Too clean sometimes.
Not like New York. Oh yeah, I got yelled at for asking if they sold gum because I didn't know.
In Singapore? Where did you? Oh my god. Okay, as a Singaporean, I'm actually embarrassed right now. Usually we're quite nice. But where do you ask like for gum? Where did you try to purchase one?
I tried to purchase gum because I needed it for the plane. It's the only way I can reduce some of my pain, actually. And I didn't have any gum, and I said, do you guys sell gum? And the guy was like, what? Don't even ask me that. We don't sell gum here. And I was like, oh, are there cameras? Like, what's happening right now? He goes, it's illegal. And I was like, it is. And
I'm Jesus
like,
Christ.
I didn't know. I'm American. I'm like, I didn't know.
Oh my god.
Because it was like an 8-hour, I was taking a layover, you know? I was like, it was a flight. So I was like, oh my god, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
But did you ask it, like, did you ask the question, like, at a normal grocery store, or?
No, like, I was at, like, I don't know, we call them, like, 7-Elevens or bodegas, and it was just, like a little store, and I was like, oh my god, I'm not trying to trap you, like, I was like, oh my god, what is happening right now?
Oh my god.
And I talked to my friend, I was like, you could have warned me that you guys don't have gum here.
Oh god. Oh, I totally understand. Because my boyfriend is from LA itself, and when he came here, he said the same thing. He's like, you guys are so freaking clean. I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Where's he from?
He's from LA.
Oh yeah. Too funny.
It's too clean. I can't stand it. I'm like, yeah, I know.
And LA proper is fairly clean compared to New York City. So it's all relative. But yeah, it was like, I was just like, wow, everything is pristine.
My apologies. I live right by the highway. So yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was so funny. I was just like, wow, this is a new experience.
But did you enjoy your stay here? Did you get to eat a lot?
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. And it was, you know, I hadn't seen my friend in a couple of years because she'd been over in Southeast Asia for so long that it was nice just to spend some time with her. And, you know, she lives very well in Singapore. So I wanted to see some of the other things that where other people don't live as well, because I'm a social worker. Like, I need to get in the trenches,
yeah.
You know? So it was nice to be able to have her. She had a driver. Mm. She was lucky enough to have a driver. Her driver was born and raised in Singapore. So he took me to, like, you know, like all the different places.
The tourist attractions. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the non-touristy things that I would want to see.
Yeah.
Like he took me to where he grew up, and he explained about like the buildings and how the residents work there. And he took me to like one of the old villages, the only one that was standing, you know, like things like that were more important to me that no one knew about.
True.
So that was nice. Cause like you can always, there's a lot of touristy stuff to do, but I'm always like the off the beaten path kind of girl. So
true. Yeah. I agree with you. There's always a difference between traveler and a tourist.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't like to be tourist wherever I go. So it was nice. It was definitely nice. I would go back for sure. I would go back. I have a friend right now who's there, and I keep like living through his Instagram stories. I was like, I was there. And I'm like, oh, cool, my friend is right there. Like, walk to the left, you know. I'm just like,
oh, that's cool. That's good, actually. I've never been to New York. Well, now that I've changed my job. I know, I will. But now that I've changed my job, I'm in the airlines industry as a reservation sales. So
that's not stressful?
That is.
Yeah. I'm like, so you went from retail, which is a stressful job, to airline. I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah, I know. But I think this may sound really weird, but I think I'd rather be verbally abused than physically abused. Like, you know how customers are there? Pardon?
Agreed.
Right? That's true. Because I've had like costume necklaces thrown at me because they can't exchange it. I'd rather be like cursed at on the phone.
Yeah, or maybe you find a role where you have neither. You know, so you could have like a normal like life where you're not stressed all the time.
No, I know. I try to break into marketing, but I guess the papers that I have isn't strong enough. So that's why I have a podcast right now, and I'm trying to like, you know, like have a footing in this line, in the not entertainment line, but in the media line, because it's quite hard. Like in Singapore, I think if you do have the papers, but you don't have the experience and you try to break into it, that was my hardship, though. It's kind of hard for me to break into the marketing industry. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, marketing is competitive for sure.
Yeah, it is. That's why I have a day job now and doing a podcast and everything else that I could. I have a couple of jobs as well, same as you.
And Singapore is hard because it's small, so the opportunities probably aren't as large as they would be if you were in a place. I mean, Singapore's tiny comparatively, so.
It's puny.
Yeah. Come to New York. Bring your LA boyfriend with you.
I will. We were planning on that, actually. We were thinking that maybe we should go to New York one day.
You should. Let me know when you're here.
I will, definitely. I'm going to like, Amanda, I'm coming to New York.
That would be amazing.
Can I please meet you and give you a hug? Okay, I'm going home now.
That would be amazing to see you.
I know. I would be so happy if I see you. I think I'm going to cry. Oh, my God. Okay.
Aww.
No, it's true. You don't know how much it means to me. Once again, I'm going to say it again. You don't know how much it means to me for me to see you like on MSNBC. Like, you know how sometimes as humans we get a little bit ignorant and we're like, oh, I'm going through shit right now. That's when I try to search for things and then, oh my God, people like this actually exists. People actually have bigger problems than I am. It's true.
Yeah, it's humbling sometimes. You realize that those things. But you know, the one thing that I've learned about experience and relationships and all of that is everything is relative. Mm. You know, I remember the first time I was experiencing like I was having a lot of issues and I was in so much pain and I just remember my friend being like, yeah, my dad's going through a root canal, and I was like, this is not a root canal. It was like, so angry, and I was like, that's nothing compared to it. But for her it was, Because that was the hardest thing she'd ever had to deal with, was the fact that she had to see her father going through root canal, you know? And so what I realized that that was her way of trying to identify with my pain or my struggle, best thing that she knew how, which was her biggest struggle. And so for me, it's like, that's the way I look at people's experiences with things now, is that everything is relative. Like, no one will ever understand the TN pain unless you have it, and you don't want anyone to have it. So they're trying to, for them, like, their worst thing could have been a root canal. And that's not a walk in the park, you know? So
it's true.
So for them, that's their hardest experience, and they're trying to identify with you through their hardest experience. So for me now, it's like, whenever I get down, like, because we all do, we all have our moments.
Yeah.
Like, all do. It's just about putting things in perspective in that moment, you know?
True. I agree with you. I think different people actually, you know, view things differently. Some of them, like you said, may think that root canal, in comparison to TN, for me itself, a migraine is, it's madness. But in comparison to TN, Jesus Christ, I don't think I'll be able to take the pain. Now that I know bits and pieces of it, of TN, I'm like, no, there's no way you'll go through that.
Migraines are not fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, migraines are not fun. By the way, there is, I met some people when I was in Indonesia, and one of the guys struggles with what he thinks I have, which is TN, but I think what he has is maybe cluster headaches or migraine, but he gave me this stuff that he said is absolutely amazing. It doesn't work for me, but it does work for him. And so if you want to try it, it's basically really interesting. It's very similar to some of the new research that's out about using Tylenol and ibuprofen, or I guess you guys call it acetaminophen and
That's right.
ibuprofen, that putting those two together with caffeine, like, actually can help, like, migraines or headaches. It didn't work for me, but there's this, it's really cheap and it's amazing stuff. So he sent it to me and I've got tons and I don't use it. So I'm happy to send it to you if you want to try it.
I think that's the problem though, that it is possible to be done, but rational wise, I think shipping it would be really expensive, right? Am I wrong? Correct me if I'm wrong.
He sent it to me. It's really light. So I don't know. He sent it to me I was like, can I pay you? And he's like, no, if it works, then we can talk. And so.
Is it like a pill?
I think they're pills. Yeah, they're pills. Like, but they come in like little packets instead of like a bottle. So they're flat. They're easy to ship. I don't know. I don't know how it would be. Or if you have friends in Indonesia, they could just forward it right along to you. Or you can just picture and show it to you, because maybe you guys have it there and I just don't know.
True. I think I haven't heard about that. Yeah, probably they might have it here, because in Singapore we have like small Indonesian like medicinal stores where I buy like my, you know, like my ointments for a massage,
right?
So maybe they might have it, so I'm gonna ask you for a picture later.
Yeah, no, of course. I absolutely will hand it to you. Just to try. I mean, I'm a big fan of trying everything. You know?
Same only here.
You know, sometimes you're like, well, if it'll work, I mean, I'll try it. You know, so true. I've tried quite a few things. You know, and I prefer it not to be the heavy meds, you know, or surgery.
Yeah, that's very true. But that's the thing, though, with pills, because it's the same as you as well. I'm a big fan of trying as well. But because I recently got a drug allergy, not recently, though, a couple of years ago, that's why I'm like, oh, is this natural? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So that's why.
When you get pumped with drugs for years on end, after a while, you start losing things like your ability to speak and your memory.
True. That's very true, though. Oh my God, I looked like a zombie when that happened to me. And it was one place I was told by the doctor that it was within, the ratio is in 1,000 of people, there's only one that would get it, and the unlucky one is me. I was like, what?
that's pretty much me, too. Like, I've been allergic to, I think, about 14 medications so far, and he's like, oh, it's like 1%, less than 1%, you should try it. I'm like, great. And then like the next week I have like a deadly rash, and I'm like, okay, great.
Good job.
Yeah. But, you know, the benefit of being on, because I, you know, I take two medications, pharmaceutical medications right now. The yeah. benefit is that when you can't speak or you can't remember, you can blame it on your meds.
True. Very, very true. I've been there.
Yes. So, you know, sometimes I like to use them as an out to things like, what? I don't remember your name, but really I'm just bad at names, yeah. you know?
Yeah, that's true. But speaking of like therapies and like medicines and pharmaceutical like drugs, have you tried like other alternatives, like probably weed or...
Yeah, so I have tried, I do acupuncture 2 to 3 times a week, which mm-hmm. has been to be really helpful to my atypical TN. Mm. It doesn't help the classic TN as much, but certainly reduces my pain, I'd say, to about 60% of where it normally is.
Yeah.
For my atypical TN. When I go regularly. So acupuncture for me has been like a saving grace. Mm-hmm. I also tried medicinal marijuana, which is the CBD, the THC binder, which yeah. has been to be more helpful at night. Obviously, I can't take it during the day because I have a full-time job and I actually like to be really present.
Otherwise, you'll be high. I was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, I mean, the one that I use is very, very low THC content. It's just there as a binder because CBD has great benefits. But for TN people, like generally, most of us don't feel any relief from just CBD. It has to be a full spectrum or something that has a THC binder. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make me high at all, but it definitely makes me more... relaxed and yeah. calm and a little too chill for the work that I do.
Okay.
Be really, really present in my work. So for me, I don't take that during the day at all. I just take it at night because it wears off in 6 hours. So, yeah. But it's been helpful as far as being able to sleep longer at night because I do have painsomnia, what we call, we term it painsomnia. So I go to sleep and then I wake up every hour and a half in pain. And so this has like helped me sleep like straight 4 to 5 hours, which is nice.
I see. So let me, you know, since we're talking about this, I'm just trying to understand I have a question though. When was the first time that you actually realized that you have TN, like you realize that, oh my god, I think something is wrong somewhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's really been an interesting process. So I basically, the first time that I actually thought, oh, this is terribly wrong, was when I was teaching fitness, and that was in, I think it was in 2007, and that was my first full-blown, like, all-out attack, which I had not had. I had had symptoms for about since my teens. So I was I was 30-ish. I think I was 30 or 31 when I had my first full-blown attack. I guess it was 30. It was fairly soon after my mom died. And I was teaching a fitness class, and I felt like the microphone was shocking me because we wear microphones to teach. And I thought I was getting, basically shocks from the microphone. To be shorting out. So I took the microphone off and I kept getting it. And I thought, oh, this is terrible. You know, like this is horrible. I've never experienced this level of pain. So I essentially took myself to the ER. I was like, something is very wrong. And then it was a very long process of getting diagnosed officially. It took several doctors and months and months of arguing with people and fighting and advocating, which as a social worker, I've been very good at it, but not everybody. Yeah. So people tend to just be like, oh, okay, it's nothing. And for many years as a kid, I would have symptoms, you know, in my teens and I would say something's not right, but then it would be intermittent and it would go away. And so then my doctors would just be like, oh, it's nothing. You just must be stressed or it's TMJ or you know, you had braces too many times. Like it could, it was like always some other reason. And yeah, but so that was like what that first like full blown attack was the one that really where I was like, okay, no, this is definitely not an intermittent random, like yeah. I don't have tooth pain. I don't, you know, like it was pretty, it was a pretty rough, awakening to it.
That was because the doctors didn't even know what they were dealing with, right? They didn't know what to do with it. That's why they're reacting that way.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, when I was 19 and 20, when I first started having symptoms, you know, this was not even close to being on the radar. I mean, it's still not really on the radar, but people, the younger doctors are a little more aware of it because it's becoming more prevalent than they initially thought. And so I think, you know, I just had a friend at work, a colleague at work who was recently diagnosed. And she's like, I would have never known what to look for if I hadn't known your story. But when she went to a neurologist right away, they were able to diagnose her within like a week and a half. And there's a lot of research that says the sooner you get treatment, the better off you are. You know, your treatment outcomes are a lot better. And so she got on treatment right away and she's been doing, you know, pretty well. So,
yeah,
you know, so thankfully, like the doctor knew right away what it was. And that's amazing, you know,
because
20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, when I first having symptoms, like that wasn't an option. Like no one knew what it was.
Yeah, precisely. That's what I thought as well.
Yeah. It's just a dental problem. Oh, okay. You must be stressed. You must be grinding your teeth at night. You know,
it's this. It's that.
Yeah, you must have a pinched nerve in your neck. Like there's just there was just every reason for it not to be what it is. Because there just isn't a lot of knowledge out there.
It's true. That's also going back. That's also one of the reasons why I want to bring it in Singapore, because I'm trying to open an opening for people who might have it in Singapore. I'll be surprised if people start DM, you know, direct messaging me after and say, hey, thank you. I'm like, wait, I don't know. That was, you know, you never know. So I'm taking a big leap on this one because, like I said, I'm interested. I'm sure, Amanda, it's difficult to go through. I'm like, oh, I can't even deal with migraines. How did this go through TN?
Well, and interesting enough, atypical TN does resemble migraines, you know, like that type of pain, that sort of boring, searing pain. It's similar, and there's actually another sort of sister illness called cluster headaches, which are also sort of, they also fall into the same category of invisible chronic illnesses. So there's cluster headaches, there's occipital neuralgia, which is similar to trigeminal neuralgia, but it's in a different part, and GN, which is another one, which affects different areas. So, you know, but they're all centered around your head. And so, you know, I think it is important to take this leap, because the reality is there's probably a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot, it's not as rare as I think people believe it to be, because there are so many misdiagnosed people, or people that go undiagnosed, like me, for 20 years, you know?
Yeah. But I see what you're talking about, like, does... I may sound like a dum-dum when I'm asking you this, but I'm trying to know more so that I can understand it better. But for your triggers itself, does the pain start at your head, or is it everywhere else in your face or any other part?
So interestingly enough, everybody is different. And I think that's why it's so hard to understand the illness itself is we all have different triggers and we all experience different types of pain. And we're all very different in symptomatic, like we express different symptoms, but along similar lines, but the experience feels different to everybody. But for, in general, like it always stems from the trigeminal nerve, and the trigeminal nerve has three branches that run into your face. The first one runs like along the eye area. The second one is along the cheek and the upper jaw, and the third branch is the lower jaw. And so most people have at least one branch effect. They have at least one branch affected and they have one side. Some are bilateral, which I can't even imagine.
Mm, oh, God.
And then you have the classic TN, which is that shock. It feels like electric shocks. It feels like you're being like electrocuted or tased in your face. And then the atypical one is that constant, almost migraine-like, you feel like your teeth are being pulled out, or, you know, you have sensitivities to like light, sound, all of that. And that's the atypical side. And so we all experience it differently. But for me, I am branch 1 and 2 on the left side. So I'm very lucky. When I first started officially diagnosed, I had only had classic TN branch 1, which is by the eye. So when I first, for 20 years, I just kept getting shocked in my forehead and my eye.
Oh.
And then as time goes on, because it tends to be progressive, like I started getting shocks in both 1 and 2. And then I got atypical in both 1 and 2. So I'm super lucky that I'm one side. I'm only unilateral left sided and I don't have the bottom of my jaw affected. Because many people have bilateral 1, 2, and 3. And that's really that I can't even imagine what that's been like. So I really do consider myself very fortunate to have the ability to work and be a productive member of society and to be able to have these types of conversations. Though some days I can't speak to, generally I do fairly well. And I think I'm lucky because many people are not as lucky. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. No, but I agree with you. This is why they call it the suicide disease though.
Yes. Yes. And it is a really hard, because it's always a thing, it is really hard to really explain to people who don't know the illness what it's like or what it feels like or even like how you cope, because the reality is it's different for everybody. Mm. And my days are different. Some days I can't brush my teeth. Some days, you know, like it'll take me 45 minutes because I have to do it to go to work, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have a choice, though. Mouthwash is a really cool trick. I do think that it's very different for different people, and people experience the pain different. And I think pain tolerance is also something that's hard to, it's a very subjective scale. I think it's hard, and for everybody is different. And I have many friends, even some in New York, we talk to, who I talk to very regularly. And what's interesting is we always seem to have pain on similar days. I mean, I think it is somewhat, again, I am not an expert in in a lot of those things, so I have theories. And I do think that certainly there's a relation to barometric pressure. And I'm a big fan of tracking all my symptoms and keeping journals so that I have a better handle and understanding of it. I can tell you when it's going to rain to like a day and a half before it's going to, like, I'm probably your best like meteorologist, based on my face pain, you know?
Yeah. I know. But that's a good thing though. Like at least, you know, when you know that something that you're going through is not, how should I put this? It's not widespread, but not a lot of people know about it. It's always good. That's how we learn ourselves about it, you know? Like, we write down journals, and you never know when you will need to go back and actually, oh, shit, this happened.
Yeah, and I do. Like, when I coach my clients, and I work with a lot of chronically ill people, I have them keep diaries of everything, because a lot of people are homebound and they can't work. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm very particular about having them keep pain diaries. Mm. And, you know, sometimes it's what you eat. I have very, very, very major triggers to foods. And I only learned that once I started to work on my diet and removed everything completely except for fruits and vegetables, and slowly started reintroducing things to test out the idea of foods being triggers and realize that I have a lot of triggers. And so now I eat a specific diet to help me. And I'm lucky and fortunate enough to have, you know, a really good career and medical insurance, so I can buy organic vegetables and I can eat. You know, I have accessibility, which a lot of people don't.
Yeah, it's true. So
for me, you know, if you live in a very a very low income neighborhood, your access to healthy foods don't exist. So when you're struggling, you're going to go and get, you know, a $2 cheeseburger from McDonald's because it's easy, it's accessible, and it's quick. You know.
Yeah,
and,
very true.
And so, you know, that's just part of your life. And so when I coach people, we have to work with, like, what changes can you make? Because that's something I can do. I don't eat gluten, dairy, soy. But I can do that because I have time to, and I have the ability to make my meals and cook my meals and, you know, all of those things. So, you know, I think I've been very, very fortunate because I have a lot of resources and I'm very aware of, and I've learned a lot over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope that for people who do listen to your podcast, that if they're concerned about stuff, that they learn to get a really good diagnosis, get it quickly, and then start thinking about ways that they can help themselves. Because I think in general, people are very, very accustomed to just listening to what doctors say and taking whatever pills doctors tell you to take.
Very true.
You know, it's sort of like we don't have control over the illness. We don't know what's going to happen to us, and we don't know what's going to trigger what, but we can actually feel like we have a little bit control when we're able to look at these things and say, well, I can't control the pain, but what can I control? It's like, I can control how I eat because I know it makes the pain worse.
Yeah, you know? It's true. It's like dealing with the problem there, and then instead of, you know, asking the what ifs and everything else.
Yeah. And let's be real, like, giving up coffee was probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Or you're a coffee person? Did you drink it every day?
I was, but caffeine is a trigger for me, which I learned when I finally gave it up and tried to reintroduce it. So now I don't drink alcohol, coffee, like any caffeine at all. I mean, I do drink I drink green tea once in a while, but I've switched over to like turmeric lattes, which are of almond milk and turmeric, which is anti-inflammatory, which is my, like, that's sort of my substitute for coffee. But it, like, the caffeine addiction, I didn't realize how much caffeine really affected my pain until I let it go. And so it was a really hard thing to let go of, but, you know, the reduction in pain was way worth the cost of losing caffeine, you know.
Is it like a huge change when you stop drinking coffee?
Huge.
Oh,
but again, for people with migraines, like, coffee is actually, as a stimulant, is actually helpful for migraines.
No, but funny that you said that, actually, because when I got this job, I just recently switched jobs, and then I was a tea person before, and then I started drinking coffee, and then the triggers for my migraine actually becomes worse.
Interesting.
That's why I was like, funny that you say that. No, but it's true. I was like, wait, I try to drink coffee every morning. I try not to make it a habit, like, to drink it in the afternoon or after lunch. But I would have this crazy migraines right after lunch. I try to take care of my diet as well, because it's amazing if people actually pay attention to what they eat. They would see, like, all the different patterns, like, oh, I ate this, and then, oh my God, this happened, you know. But not a lot of people has the privilege to do that, and most of them don't see the patterns in it. But you're right, though. Maybe I should stop drinking coffee.
Well, if you're feeling it after lunch, then it'd be interesting to look at what you're eating for lunch, because caffeine works quicker than that, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're drinking coffee in the morning, you would feel that.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see about what it is you're eating at lunch. Because, I mean, tell you, my biggest trigger is gluten. It's unbelievable.
Really?
And now, if I eat out with friends, like, I'm so particular about where I go and eat or what I eat. you know, and again, in New York, I'm very lucky. There's a lot of gluten-free options everywhere and like gluten-free kitchens, you know, where they have a separate kitchen for people who have gluten allergies.
Yeah.
So I'm super lucky in that sense. But, you know, when I tell you, like, if I eat at a place where there's cross-contamination, I will feel it within an hour.
Oh.
The pain will just shoot, like, just terribly. So I've learned, like, what my triggers are. And for me, gluten is probably one of the biggest ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So at least I know. Because I work, like, my part-time job, I work in a hotel as well. So now I get it. Why? Like, I'm learning myself as well that, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, the allergies are actually really, it triggers. Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
I'm making a mental note myself.
I think a lot of people learn to follow sort of like an different diets. Like, there's a lot of diets and fads out. But what's most interesting about, like, following like a protocol that's like anti-inflammatory is that when you think about the trigeminal nerve, like, nerves get inflamed, right? And so if there's a compression on the nerve, which is one of the theories is that there's a compression of the nerve, and the nerve itself, then the myelin wears away from the nerve, and that's why it's sending these signals, because it's not able to, like, you know, hold it or protect it. Yeah. And so if you think about nerves being inflamed, right, your body being inflamed, that creates like more pressure, less space for the nerve to move around. Like, it makes scientific sense that if you followed an anti-inflammatory protocol, that it would help. But I didn't believe it at first, because I was like, I am not giving up bread. You know, I was like, nope. I like my sweets. I'm like, no, I'm a sugar fanatic. There's no way.
Oh, we're the same. But, you know,
yeah. But you find ways around it, right? Like, I cook. Yeah. When I want to bake, I'll bake all gluten free, and I'll bake with natural sugars. Like, I won't bake with like any real sugar. I'll bake
processed
with maple sugar.
Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, there are definitely ways around where you can still like live wholly and fully, but it takes time to switch life over.
True, that's true. The reason why I'm amazed when you talked about gluten-free is because in Singapore, see, that's the thing, Asian, you know, being an Asian, especially in Singapore, food is like everywhere. And I think they're going to kill me if I say this, but because we're not big on gluten-free food, you see, so it's, we have lots of MSG and all that stuff. So I didn't know where to start. It was until that I met my boyfriend, and he was eating gluten-free food. I couldn't register in my head, wait, why are you eating gluten-free food? Like food, sorry. So what are the consequences that if you do eat gluten-free, what's the meaning of gluten-free? It was from him that I learned that, oh, I should stop eating gluten-free because I have triggers as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, because when I was in Singapore, I struggled with eating some foods too, because everything had MSG or soy sauce and like things, you know. And I grew up, I mean, I'm Chinese, I grew up on soy sauce, like that's what we lived on, you know.
Yep, I agree with you. Me too.
So, you know, obviously now I use tamari, but like you can't find that in a lot of restaurants. Like, my friends are like, oh, do you want to go get dim sum? I'm like, nope. Like, not even a possibility, you know. I'm like, unless you want to come to my house where I can make it myself, you know. So, and it is hard, and gluten-free is a fad right now, you know.
Yeah,
like, it's
it
huge
is.
Here. It's such a fad. But, you know, on some level, that's great, because now there have been a lot of restaurants that are more aware of it. Mm. But for people who actually have real intolerances or even real allergic reactions to it, it's actually a really interesting thing for us, because while we understand that it's a fad, like, we also like people like who have celiac or people that actually have like inflammatory diseases like ours, like, which, you know, our people won't say it's inflammatory, but for me, I notice a huge difference. So it's a really interesting experience, because I'm like, well, that's fine. Let it be a fad, because now I can eat out more.
Like, yeah, it's true. No, I agree with you, and I think I can say that both of us agree on this, that it's amazing how changing our diet not like, you know, eating everything. I mean, eating organic is important, but like, there's a reason why people should be prissy about their food. I mean, I'm like certain things that I can't eat because it triggers me. I can't help it, but I have to take care of my diet because I have enzema as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you know, like, sorry, go ahead. Oh,
no,
I didn't mean
no, it's okay.
I do think though I think it's hard because giving up food when you can eat, right? Because some days, I mean, last year I went for 7 months without being able to chew, right? So,
jeez, yeah.
You know,
7 months?
My weight fluctuates like a good 40 pounds every flare. Yeah. I go through a really long period where I have to puree all my foods and, you know, you can't puree bread. It's not really that good.
You know, sure, like, I agree.
So you end up eating super healthy. I mean, like I think it is interesting because I do have the ability, right? Like I consider myself lucky and I realize that and I'm fully aware that, you know, there are major discrepancies across the U.S., with accessibility to things, you know, or really even accessibility to knowledge, you know, and good doctors. And so, you know, when I think that diet is huge, but I also understand the reality that not everybody has the ability to do that.
True.
You know, and so when I train, like when I work with and coach people who have chronic illness, it is really just about looking about the small changes they can make that even could help even the slightest.
Because like within wavelength like, itself, within reach. Sorry,
can do all of that. Like no one can be. It's hard to be gluten free, dairy free, soy free, sugar free, caffeine free. It's like that's really hard.
And yep,
like
I'm putting my hands up now.
Yeah, right. It's like, and even I have moments where I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna eat this chocolate, and it's gonna be totally fine. Like, you know, like I balance it out. I'm like, okay, I know I'm gonna eat chocolate, and I know it's gonna cause pain, but I'm gonna like preemptively like go to acupuncture. You know what I mean? Like, you figure out the balance that you can make. Still enjoy your life without feeling like you're in a prison because you can't eat anything and you're in pain. True. You know, it's a balance. I think that's the part that's the hardest to find and figure out.